This crossover episode of Locked On Warriors and Locked On Heat is brought to you by CBDMD. Getting a good night's sleep could be much easier said than done, but don't worry, because our good friends at CBDMD have exactly what you need to get the sleep that you deserve. CBDPM blends melatonin and other sleep-promoting ingredients with 500 milligrams of high-quality CBD to create a powerful and effective sleep aid. And to make it even easier to get the year started off right, they're offering all of our listeners 25% off your next order when you use the promo code NBA at checkout. Once again, that's CBDMD.com, promo code NBA for 25% off your purchase of superior CBD products from CBDMD.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Golden State Warriors and Miami Heat will be matching up for the first time this season on Wednesday night. So to get you ready for the game is this special crossover episode. I'm David Ramil, credentialed reporter and the host of Locked On Heat. With me today is Wes Goldberg, a reporter with the Mercury News and the host of Locked On Warriors. Both shows are part of the Locked On Podcast Network. So please make sure to subscribe to the shows if you haven't already, wherever you listen to podcasts. Miami 11-16, Golden State 15-13. I don't really want to talk about the Heat right now because things are not going particularly well, but let's start off with a little Warriors talk, Wes, because I'm curious. I haven't watched enough of those games as I'd like, but I just don't feel like we're talking enough about what the Warriors have been able to accomplish this season, unless it's to slander Steph Curry and everything that he's been able to accomplish this season. So what is the key to Golden State's success? And I quantify it as so far a successful season, despite, you know, the fact that they're barely over 500. I think given the expectations for this team with the offseason injury issues, I don't know that anybody had particularly high expectations for this group, but would you quantify it as a success first and foremost?
Yeah, I would. I mean, we're 27 games to the season. They've won now 15 games with their win Monday night against the Cavaliers. That's as many games as they won last year. So there we go. It's better than what they did. The key to what they're doing right now. And look, they've basically been a 500 team, right? They haven't won three straight games all year. They haven't lost three straight games all season. And so they, you know, it's win one here, win, lose one there. It's kind of been a tic-tac-toe of a season. But what has been probably the most consistent part of their team right now has just been defense. Steve Kerr preached that this was going to be a top 10 defensive team this season, that that was the goal. If there was a mission statement, that was it. And right now they're ranked, I think, sixth or seventh in defensive rating. So they're right there. They've basically accomplished that goal. Now, they're not a great rebounding team. They foul a lot, probably more than you'd like. But overall, they're second in defensive field goal percentage. Andrew Wiggins has been absolutely spectacular on the defensive end. I mean, I'm not exaggerating when I'm saying he will be on my all defensive team ballot. He's been that good. And you know, they're getting good contributions, obviously, from Draymond Green, Kevon Looney when he's healthy. Things are just working on that end. Offensively, it's not so much of a team effort because it's basically just Steph Curry playing at an MVP level, which turns out you could still be a pretty good offensive team when he's doing that. They need to find other ways to sort of juice up stuff in the half court, and they're finding that with Draymond Green playing center in some small ball lineups. You're kind of seeing these new wave death lineup type situations with Draymond Green at center and Juan Toscano-Anderson at forward. And they've got all these long, versatile wings that are cutting and flying around the court and doing all that stuff. But they're very much still gelling, I think, on the offensive end. But defensively, they've been better than I think I'd expected early in the season. And that so far has been kind of what they hang their hat on a night-to-night basis.
Is it sustainable? Just even listening to you describe this, it feels like this is kind of making things up as they go. I don't know. You get the sense that they'll be able to continue this throughout this really weird season? And even if they do reach the playoffs, is that something that they could potentially steal a series from another opponent?
I think when you have somebody like Steph who can go out and make 10 three-pointers on any given night, they could steal a game. They may be able to steal a series against one of those better Western Conference teams. I mean, look, I look at the West as Utah, the Lakers, and the Clippers, and we saw the problems of the Clippers last year. And look, maybe I put too much into one series when they lose 3-1 to the Denver Nuggets last year, but that stuff matters to me. And if I'm any team in the Western Conference, I'm not terribly scared of the Clippers in a playoff series as much as the Lakers or even the Jazz, honestly. So look, I think the Warriors, their goal should be to obviously avoid this play-in tournament and get one of these top six seeds. But yeah, they're funny. I feel like I mentioned that they haven't won three games and they haven't lost three games in a row yet this season. And I don't, their season does feel a little precarious, but I don't know if it's in a bad or a good way. I feel like any sort of stretch now, they could just rattle off four or five straight wins, or at the same time, they could just completely plummet and lose four straight games. It wouldn't surprise. I have no idea which way this is going to go, but they're dealing with a couple of major injuries right now to Kevon Looney and James Wise. I shouldn't say major injuries. The injuries themselves aren't major, but the absences are. And so we'll see whether or not they're back. We're recording this, in the kind of evening time. We're about to talk later today to James Wiseman, actually. So we might have an update.
But it just all feels so precarious, right? Like it's like you're counting on Looney and a rookie in Wiseman who's been someone up and down as far as his playing is concerned. And so you look at, you look at the pedigree of the Warriors, everything that they've been able to accomplish during Steve Kerr's run and with Steph at an MVP level and everything else. And it's like this season is so different, even from last year, which it was, it was clear. You have major injuries to major players. You start, somewhat tanking. Then, of course, the hiatus takes place in mid-March. You don't play basketball again for 8 months or so. And, now the team's somewhat intact. You're getting MVP-level production from Steph, and you still kind of wonder, is this even a playoff team? Is it a lottery-bound team? Is it somewhere in between? It's so weird to watch this team night in and night out.
Doesn't the whole league feel precarious?
It does.
Like, what's
it
the
does.
Team that – even the Jazz. Like, I'm waiting for the floor to fall out from that whole experience. And maybe just I'm not a believer in the Jazz. But I don't really – like with the Lakers, they were the only team I really felt confident in. And then you have the Anthony Davis injury. So I don't know what team – there's so many teams that are just in that mix in the Western Conference between, 4 to 11 and 12. And the same thing, it goes in the Eastern Conference. There's just so many 500 teams. I don't know if it's just the nature of trying to play this season in the middle of the pandemic and everything that's going on. And as we're recording this, there's games getting canceled and rescheduled and stuff. And I have no idea what's going to happen any minute now. And so the whole season just feels precarious. Every team feels a little bit on edge and as if they could just and this seems like a season that if you put together 5 or 6 wins in a row, which we see all the time, that's not a terribly long win streak. But it feels like that could be the difference. That could be what sets you apart from having to play these extra games in a play-in tournament versus maybe even having home court advantage in the playoffs. And that could be the whole difference, right? And so I think the Warriors are just like that. And this, I think maybe it's just a little bit more jarring for them because it was just such a sure thing for 5 years in a row, or really 3 years in a row since Kevin Durant got there. And now that he's gone and they've kind of went through this rebuild and everything, they just get, and I say this all the time on my podcast, David, is just, hey, you got fans, oh, what are they going to do with this and that? And what's going to be the closing lineup and all these things? And this is not the basketball in Nirvana. You don't know that you're going to finish with Kevin Durant and Draymond Green in your front court and Andre Iguodala coming off the bench as your super six man every single night. You don't know that that's going to be the case. Welcome to the rest of the NBA, where it is a game-to-game challenge to get into the playoffs. It is a game-to-game challenge to game plan and coach and do these things. And Steve Kerr has had to do a little bit more improvisation. It has been a little bit more mix and match. And that's just the way the NBA is for most teams. And it just hasn't been that for the Warriors for so long. And now they're back in that where, hey, you got maybe 3 guys who you really trust, I think, at this point, maybe 4 if you're the Warriors. That's about right for every NBA team, right? Where if you've got 5 or 6 guys who you really trust, you're in a really good spot. That's why you have teams like the Lakers winning a championship or the Jazz rolling because they got 5 or 6 guys who they really trust.
That's a lot better than where Miami's currently at. If you've spent any time on Heat Twitter, the sky is definitely falling there, especially after a loss to the Clippers. You were mentioning the Clippers, and all I kept thinking about is the fact that Miami dropped 2 games to the same team that you're talking about, despite not having Pat Beverly, Paul George, or Kawhi Leonard in the lineup. They were even missing Nicholas Batum, who had killed them in the first matchup at home in Miami. And then without Batum in the lineup, they still fell apart to the Clippers. Not a good place to be right now if you're a Miami fan. And you're talking about the precarious nature of that situation. And Miami won 4 games in a row before losing the last 2. And that might have been the difference to kind of like help salvage how fans feel about this team, even for a little bit, or at least, kind of keeping the dogs at bay, because it's been so bad watching this team deal with injury and COVID and a prolonged absence of Jimmy Butler and everything else. And now, I mean, there are fans actively talking about trading Jimmy Butler for a variety of reasons, none of which make a whole hell of a sense. Some people are saying, well, let's do right by Jimmy. He's playing his best basketball and he sacrificed so much to come here. And the rest of the team is such crap that we should do right by him by trading to a contender. Like, this is his second season with a team and people are already talking about a superstar that you pray and hope for if you're 28 other teams in this, you know, in the league to get a player like this. So I don't understand that mentality.
No, yeah, you don't trade Jimmy Butler. That's crazy. And you know, you and I know this very well. Like, Heat fans are willing to trade anybody for anybody at any point at like the drop of a pin. It's no, relax. Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo, you've got Tyler Hero, you've got a core there. And look, the Clippers loss was bad, but that Utah to Clippers or the Utah to LA little West Coast swing.
Yeah.
That has doomed so many Eastern Conference teams. That is such a tough trip. You know, it's similar to the Denver trips. It's just a hard one to make. And so I'm not that worried about them. I'm also not putting too much stock into that 4-game win streak because it came against the Wizards, the Knicks and a Rockets team that was injured. So, you know, it's probably not as good as the 4-game win streak. It's not as bad as losing two straight games, you know, to Utah and an injured Clippers team, but it's probably somewhere in the middle. And I think the most frustrating thing for me, you know, kind of side eye watching the Heat through this season while I try to cover the Warriors has been, I don't know what to make of this team because they've lacked consistency and more than any other team, they have been hit by the COVID rules or affected by the protocols more than any other team, because unlike teams like Washington and some other, you know, Dallas and teams that have had so much of their season games postponed or canceled because of the protocol, right, the Heat have sort of just barely skirted by with enough eligible players where they haven't had the games postponed, right, and they've had to play them without their best players. And so, look, it's not an excuse, but it is a reason to sort of explain why it is that the Heat aren't as good as we thought that they would be. And I'm just like the eternal optimist here, but I still have to believe that they're going to turn some things around, that their best basketball is ahead of them this year. The only thing that concerns me, David, is just how sloppy they look. You know, the Eric Spoelstra team isn't supposed to be as sloppy as they have. They lack energy. They're lacking focus and effort. Maybe that's just because Jimmy Butler, who is their leader, hasn't been on the floor for so much of this season, and they're missing that guy that they can follow. But that to me is my biggest concern.
I mean, it's certainly worth talking about, and we'll save that for the next segment when we'll also talk about whether or not Blake Griffin might be a solution for either of these teams. We'll break it down for you here in the next segment. But first, let me tell you all about betonline.ag. It's the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and the NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards and TV shows, reality TV, everything you might expect, real-time updated odds and props, and almost anything you can imagine. And BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. So head to the website and use your mobile device to sign up today and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Remember to use that promo code LOCKEDON for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Get more of the sports news you need in less time with our new Locked On Today podcast. Peter Bukowski hosts Locked On Today, a daily podcast breaking down the biggest stories with analysis from our local experts. Start your day with all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes. Subscribe to the Locked On Today podcast wherever you get podcasts. So we were talking before the break about Miami's sloppy play of late, and that's kind of where I'm at too, because I'm trying to calm everybody in the midst of the storm here, and maybe the storm is self-created because it just, you know, the expectations for this team, I'm talking about Miami in particular, are so high because of their success in the finals, and then you're kind of gearing up in the offseason where you're linked to almost every superstar, from Giannis, of course, to James Harden. I'm sure you went through some of that with Giannis to Golden State rumors building up steam during the offseason. But Miami fans, I don't know if they were just misled or if they were just delusional, but they've been so spoiled after the success of 2010 that I feel like they're almost always feel like they're going to be able to attract any free agent whenever, you know, their name comes into as a possibility. But, you know, you look at what this Heat team has done and they haven't really been together as a unit. And that's the big problem, is that Jimmy Butler's missed so much time. Goran Dragic, their third, perhaps even their second best scorer. You know, he was their leading scorer in the playoffs until the NBA Finals. That he's been out for a lot of the season. He's been dealing with nagging injuries. He's a little bit older. He's not quite the player he was. Bam is, I don't know if he's quite ready to be the superstar that so many fans expect him to be. Like, he's a max level player. And unfortunately, as you well know, whenever you start talking about a player's contract, it's whether or not that player lives up to that value, or whether or not he's worth that kind of money that he's getting paid. It's a ridiculous conversation. It's impossible to quantify because so much of that is subjective. You and I both feel pretty strongly that Bam is absolutely a max level player, but he's just not putting up, you know, Steph-like numbers. He's not putting up 30 points per game. And so everybody says, oh, what does he do out there? But you look at this group, and because of all that inconsistency, it's hard to quantify where they're currently at. Like, does a change need to happen? Will a change actually help? Can they just continue to ride it out and wait for Goran and Avery Bradley to return into the lineup? And even if that's the case, the flip side of that is also, well, is this team actually even that good if you're waiting for Goran Dragic at 35 to be your savior, or Avery Bradley, who was, you know, signed on a minimum deal and hasn't been particularly great, hasn't actually played all that much for Miami? It's really hard to evaluate this team, because my feeling is that they can still put it all together. But right now things are tough. And of course, then the other side of it, all this, is that people are already looking at whether or not Jimmy Butler is going to explode any day now and just ask for a trade and force his way out of the Heat. That, you know, the fans are so frustrated right now that they half expect him to demand his way out of Miami. And I don't know what to say about this team, because it's a bad place right now. And it doesn't necessarily feel like it has to be. Like, they're only five games under 500. As we talked about in the first segment, a couple wins here and there, and all of a sudden you're right into it. I mean, the fourth best team in the Eastern Conference, I think, is only like four or five games above Miami in the standings. That you can clear that in a couple of weeks, especially given the uncertainty of this season.
Yeah, it's, to me, you know, I think the problem with the Heat's season so far, in addition to some of the inconsistencies because of the COVID protocols and stuff, is, look, you went into this offseason trying to maintain cap space for Giannis, right? That flexibility. Giannis then signs the extension. Your flexibility was basically, I don't know, wasted on, you know, replacement level players. You lose a Jay Crowder, you get an Avery Bradley. You know, you kind of just, you get a Mo Harkless. You play musical chairs. Mo Harkless hasn't been any good for them. Like you said, Avery Bradley hasn't played. Goran Dragic has been injured now. But even when that was your strategy, right, you were betting on not just maintaining that flexibility for Giannis for, you know, next year, but in order to improve, you were banking on internal development from Bam Adebayo and Tyler Hero. Now, I would argue that Bam has made that jump. I would still have him near the top of my ballot, if not at the top of my ballot, for most improved player. I think what he's been doing has been awesome, and we forget that what he did in the playoffs last year is not what he was doing in the regular season. Look at the stats year to year. They're bonkers. He's blowing out his stats from last regular season. So the problem has been that Tyler Hero hasn't done that. And you try to shoehorn him into being your lead playmaker, point guard, whatever we call it now. And he didn't really make that leap the way that you had hoped. His counting stats are better, right? More points, more assists, more rebounds and stuff, but his percentages aren't as good from 3-point range and from, yeah, you know, the free throw line. It's a little concerning there. I don't think he's been terrible, but he's been a little bit more turnover prone. I don't know that he's ready to sort of take those reins. And that's why you see him going back to the bench and Goran Dragic coming, you know, getting his starting job back here. But, you know, if he were able to make that leap, I think we're talking about a very different situation that the Heat are in, because even if the wins and the losses aren't where you're at, you can at least see the product on the floor kind of coming together. And right now that's been the problem, is that they just don't pass the eye test. And yeah, they're four or five games back in the East and all these things. And to me, they just need to make some sort of move, because Tyler Hero hasn't made the leap that you had hoped he would make. Bam Adebayo has. Well, let me stop you right there.
Cause what's the move then? Because I mean, we're going to save Blake for the next segment, but okay, what's the next move then? Because I don't know, you're linked to all these superstars, but those aren't realistic. I mean, the price tag, or at least the reported price tag for a player like James Harden, with which Miami was linked, was astronomical. And I think that's a big part of what Tyler's struggles were linked to as well, because his name was clearly attached to any potential trade there. And it was Duncan Robinson who Miami was desperately hoping to hang on to. And so Tyler was basically out the door if Houston had just agreed to a deal with him as the core of any kind of package in order to acquire Harden. But, you know, aside from a superstar, which doesn't seem likely to happen, even fringe players, even like a Thad Young or a PJ Tucker, seem beyond Miami's capacity because of their lack of draft capital, because the players on this roster, with the exception of Jimmy and Bam, haven't exceeded expectations. And so I just don't know that there's anybody on this, you know, fans being fans, they'll trade old Andre Iguodala and Kelly Olynyk and his $13 million salary and his struggles from 3-point range away for Bradley Beal. And that's not enough just because right. The numbers match up. So I don't know what the move is. I don't know that there's one that's possible.
Yeah. You know, I don't know that they can make the all-star trade right now. And I don't even know who it would be even available if they were trying to, but yeah, the Thad Youngs, the PJ Tuckers, those kind of guys, I think they're going to have to scour the buyout market, and good players could be available there. They might be a move away from making another move. You know, what could they realistically get for, a Kendrick Nunn type, right? If there's another team out there that could use a scoring point guard off the bench. I don't think you're getting a first round pick for Kendrick Nunn, or if you are, it's going to be heavily protected. Sure. But that would at least be an asset that you could then flip for some other, maybe more veteran type player. What could you get right now for Andre Iguodala? What could you get right now for, dare I say, Goran Dragic, right? Like Goran Dragic, he's at the point of his career where he's probably going to be injured a lot. Right. Like just that's kind of where he's going right now. And so you've got to have an adult conversation in that front office and say, you know what, we love Goran Dragic, everything he stands for and how he embodies the culture and all these things. And when he's healthy, you know, that playoff run he had last year was just incredible. But do we really expect to get him, get that from him? And if we could flip him for somebody who might be a little bit younger and more of a contributor and fits into the long-term plans a little bit more, is that something that they should explore? And we know that they've been willing to trade Goran Dragic in the past. So, I think these are the type of things, now that you don't really have the draft picks and all the, and some of these things, you may have to part with a core piece in order to get more assets to increase your flexibility going forward. I don't know that the Heat are willing to do that. And I don't really know, frankly, if what player would be out there. I think Thad Young would be a great fit for this team. It's probably going to be a Marcus Morris type of price where you have to get rid of an immediate first round pick, and he just don't really have that. And so you might have to figure out a way to get that. I don't really know what on this roster that they have that they can move to go and acquire something like that.
Not a whole heck of a lot. In fact, I don't know if you're looking at players, and I hate the commodification of players as assets. You look at this roster and they're, kind of the theme for this episode, the precarious nature of things. And that roster itself is very, very precarious. Like you'd say Duncan Robinson might be one of your best assets because he's young-ish. He's not even exactly, he's only in his third season, but he's also 27 years old. And it seems like teams have figured him out to a certain degree. And maybe part of that is because he's playing with a less than stellar starting lineup where there's not the kind of shooting to absorb some of the pressure that he's getting, but he's being guarded very closely. He doesn't have quite the same looks. People are shutting down or limiting that dribble handoff that they ran to perfection between him and Adebayo. And I don't know if he's even as great an asset. And then you've got a 20-year-old Tyler Hero, but it seems like he's probably better destined to fill a six-man role than a, starting guard kind of role. And while he could potentially still reach an all-star level if he's averaging 25 to 30 points per game, and that seems within the realm of possibility, maybe you don't want to sacrifice that much for a player like him. And so Nunn, he's been in and out of the lineup. He hasn't really played particularly well. He has some games here and there where he has big scoring, bursts, and then he'll kind of struggle the next couple of games. You're going to get a lot of shooting from him. It's just whether or not those shots are going to fall regularly. And Jimmy and Bam are locked up. I don't think there's any real value to an older guard like Goran. And unless he requests a trade to a contender, and even then, it would be kind of one of those weird deals where they trade him for a heavily protected pick or something like that they don't ever actually expect to get in return. Because I can't see any team saying to themselves, yeah, we need a 36-year-old point guard with shaky legs, coming back from a plantar fascia injury in the playoffs, that is going to probably continue to deal with more lingering knee issues and everything else over the course of his career. Like, I mean, when he's healthy, the burst he provides is fantastic. But even then, like, and then that's, you know, again, tying to what I was saying before, Miami is counting on these players, despite the fact that these players are on the surface not particularly great as assets or whatever you want to call them. Miami still needs him to be out there. Like, Avery Bradley is not a star by any stretch, but Miami's issues limiting guards. I mean, Amir Coffey, who I don't even know who that is, just called up. He just got called up from the G League. Like, they kept saying it during the broadcast. He was actually in the G League bubble in Orlando. They called him up that day. He goes to join the Clippers because they were missing four damn starters, and he winds up having a career night against the Heat. Can Avery Bradley stymie that? Yeah, in theory. You know, when Miami is missing some three-point shooting because they figured out Duncan and Kelly Olynyk's shot isn't falling, does Goran provide that? In theory. But again, you're counting all these things to fall perfectly in place. All the dominoes have to fall in the basket. And it's just hard to kind of see whether or not Miami has any hope of tying it all together quickly enough. But perhaps there is a solution. Perhaps it's Blake Griffin. We'll talk about that in the next segment. I'm here with Wes Goldberg, and you're listening to Locked On Heat crossover with Locked On Warriors. But there's one thing you can count on. That's Built Bar, because it's the best tasting protein bar ever. There's 18 amazing flavors, 12 classic flavors, and 6 new ones, and all of them are great. They're all 100% covered in chocolate. They're soft and easy to chew. You don't even know you're eating a protein bar, but they are. They're healthy. They're great for you, and they're great for people that are health conscious and looking to lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. They've got all the nutrients you need for all sorts of diets, and best of all, if you go to BuiltBar.com right now and use the promo code LOCKDOWN, you'll get 20% off your next order. Use the promo code LOCKDOWN for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. Go behind the scenes of the game you love and get all the sides of the story with the Rejecting the Screen podcast. Each week, Noah Kozloff and Adam Stanko get personal while interviewing players, coaches, media members, all the people who make the NBA happen. Subscribe to Rejecting the Screen wherever you get podcasts. I'm here with Wes Goldberg. We're talking about the upcoming matchup between the Heat and Warriors, and a name that makes a lot of sense, perhaps for both teams. We were talking about this on the national show, the Locked On NBA podcast, which you should absolutely be subscribed to at this point. We were talking about Blake Griffin the day that the news broke that he's not going to be playing, and he's hammering out a situation there with the front office where they're looking to move him. And it seems less likely that they'll trade him, even though Miami, somehow, Las Vegas odds makers are predicting that they'll acquire Blake Griffin via trade. And I hope that doesn't happen, because he's owed $36 million this year and $39 the next. If you're looking at a team that's already hamstrung too much salary to players that are already past their prime, getting Blake Griffin doesn't seem the answer. But let's say a trade doesn't happen. Let's say he does get likely bought out. He becomes an unrestricted free agent and he's looking at other teams to play for. Miami and Golden State make a lot of sense. And that's the point that you made yesterday on Locked On NBA, that because of his shooting ability, you know, if it's consistent, somewhat consistent, if he's still able to make passes from the perimeter, he can still initiate offense, even though he's been sapped of a lot of that athleticism. Why do you think he fits with Golden State or Miami?
Well, I just think he needs to be with a team that values the passing skills that he has, the playmaking skills that he has. And both Miami and Golden State are those teams. You know, Golden State likes to facilitate offense out of the post, and so Blake Griffin could fit in really easily there, kind of reprise that Zaza Pachulia, Andrew Bogut, David West type role. Whereas in Miami, you know, you could probably argue that Blake Griffin is just a stretch four at this point of his career, and they are missing a big body who can stretch the floor from that power forward position, who would allow Bam Adebayo to play center more regularly and not have to pair him with a guy like Kelly Olynyk, who is limited. And look, I don't know that Blake Griffin is any less limited than Kelly Olynyk at this point, but bodies at this point help, and Miami could use as many bodies as possible. And I think and as good as Kelly Olynyk is as a playmaker and a floor spacer, I just think Blake Griffin still has a little bit more cachet, where he could, you know, probably take more respect from opposing defenses as far as a floor spacer and passer. So I think for him, if he were to enter the buyout market, he would make sense for both of those teams. I'm with you. The Heat should stay away strongly if it's a trade situation, unless, of course, they can get him and get a bunch of first round picks in return. If they have to stack a few salaries to get there, you bring him back, you're able to acquire some draft picks, along with Blake Griffin. You're not trading draft picks to get him. You're getting draft picks to take him and that salary. If you could do that, then I would have to have a real conversation because, it, like I said, if you're the Heat, you don't really have those assets. And, you know, with Giannis locked up, what's the point? Are you, what are you maintaining flexibility for? Are you really trying to go and get Victor Oladipo this offseason? He doesn't look like he's the player that you thought he might be, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. And so depending on what you could get back with Blake Griffin, I would at least consider it. And maybe that's the idea behind some of these rumors. But if it's just a straight up trade out of desperation, then it would be a stay away for me.
Well, let's move on here because I've taken up too much of your time, but I had some questions I wanted to ask that kind of tie together with both teams. And I've actually gotten some listener questions as well. Let's try to keep these to short answers here. But one of the things that keeps going up, I guess, especially for Heat fans, but it could apply to Golden State fans as well. Do you rate the past offseason as a failure for either team?
No, I think both teams did kind of what they had to. I mean, for the Warriors, you know, Klay Thompson going down with the Achilles injury in November kind of screwed up their offseason. But right now it looks like James Wiseman was the right pick at number two. And Kelly Oubre hasn't been awesome for them, but he was kind of, you know, there wasn't that many options of guys to get with the TPE. And other than that, they didn't have any other real flexibility. With Miami, like I said, you didn't plan on Avery Bradley missing all these games. You didn't plan on Goran Dragic being banged up. I mean, that stuff doesn't really have to do with the offseason strategy. It's just, it's kind of just bad luck. And everything else that's happened to them. If anything, you probably went too hard on the Giannis angle if you're the Heat, and it kind of, maybe it backfired. Maybe you should have done something more aggressively with James Harden. I don't know, but all that stuff is so, you know, second guessing, revisionist history kind of stuff. And you can't really, like, 10 times out of 10, you do the same thing. Giannis is the type of player that you are willing to postpone your flexibility for, or your plans for, to maintain that flexibility. So I don't think it's a failure. You know, I don't want to play the results that much.
Andre Iguodala for Kelly Oubre. Who says no?
I was going to ask you about this. I think Kelly Oubre could be really valuable to Miami. So another thing to me, and it's not like I'm trying to pawn off a problem from the Warriors to the Heat, because I'd rather the Heat have the problem. But one of the things that to me that sticks out, and you kind of hit on this in the second segment, where I think what the Heat are really missing is that drive and kick element. And just because of how banged up Goran Dragic has been, they haven't had that. Tyler Hero, I remember you and I talking about Hero as a draft prospect. And the big knock on him was that he doesn't really have that athleticism to get to the rim and kind of be that primary ball handler, playmaker. And we saw last year in the bubble and stuff like that, he thrives as that second, you know, that second score, that guy that's attacking a scrambling or already bent defense off of Jimmy Butler's drives or Goran Dragic's drives or Bam Adebayo's drives. And without that element, Tyler Hero is a little bit limited. He can't get to the rim and kick and drive so much attention to the basket. And so Kelly Oubre, he's not a playmaker, but he at least has that vertical spacing and that cutting ability and that athleticism that maybe Miami is missing. Really, ever since they lost Derek Jones, he would be sort of an amped up version of him. I don't know. How impressed have you been with Andre Iguodala? I think the Warriors, I don't know that they would be that inclined to reunite with Andre Iguodala, which I think would shock many of, you know, my Warriors listeners and Warriors fans. But I think they're not that interested in getting older, like not that substantially older. You know, if they're unhappy with Kelly Oubre and they're just willing to say, screw it, let's do a feel good story for you. I don't know.
It kind of works out, I think, for both teams, to be honest with you. Looking at Golden State and kind of, you know, what we were talking about as far as the youth of that team. Yeah. They might not be looking to get older, but somebody that understands Kerr and understands how to play alongside Curry and Draymond, understands the balance of that locker room, I think it could work out, especially as a potential mentor for, you know, Wiseman and other players on that roster. For Miami, his weaknesses are magnified because it's already an old team that depends so much on each cog to play perfectly. And there are moments there where at 36 years old, he's such a negative on offense, and that his defense, still solid, just doesn't help as much. And so I could see him thriving more on a team like Golden State that can use that kind of, you know, veteran stability. In Miami, you're looking for more of a spark plug, and I could see Oubre being that player, to be honest.
Would the Heat be willing to throw in, say, a Kendrick Nunn or something like that? Because the Warriors have had a backup point guard problem. Two of their backup point guards are in the G League bubble right now.
Yeah.
Do you think that they'd be willing to do that?
It would probably be the first of another move for them. But yes, I could see that. Just because Nunn's also a free agent. And I think Eric Spoelstra loves Kendrick Nunn, much to the bewilderment of Heat fans. You know, they look at players like KZ Okpala and others on that roster that just aren't getting much playing time. And Kendrick Nunn going, you know, 4 of 15, somehow winds up getting all the minutes. Spo loves him. He talks about him almost in the same kind of glowing terms that used to talk about Dwayne. You know, oh, Chicago guys are just bred differently. The intensity, the toughness, the grit. Like, he uses grit to describe Kendrick Nunn more than any other player I've ever seen. So he's
kind of taken the Rodney Magruder compliment.
Oh my God, has he ever? Like, he is just, he's beloved there. So it would probably hurt Spo as much as, you know, losing Dwayne Wade to Chicago in 2016. But I think he'd get over it pretty quickly when he gets somebody actually who can score 10 points per game on a pretty consistent basis. But last question before we wrap this up. It's Golden State versus Miami, 10 o'clock on a Wednesday night. Not much reason for Miami fans to stay away. Probably not much reason for Warriors fans to actually watch the game either. But cereal or not cereal, Wes?
Well, for me, it's definitely cereal, and I'll probably be eating cereal during that game. I like to do a little halftime snack, but I think that this could be a fun game. And look, Steph Curry is playing at an MVP level. The things that he's doing have been enormously entertaining. The way that he has gained so much control over his game. There is so many great nuances to the way that he puts defenders in positions that he wants them in so that he can get to his spots and get the shots that he wants. The two-man game between him and Draymond Green really stands out now more than ever, now that they're not surrounded with other genius playmakers. They kind of just seem to be playing a different type of basketball game than their teammates sometimes. So I think for Heat fans, that's a reason to watch. And for Warriors fans to watch, go watch Bam Adebayo. I'm still thrilled to watch Bam every time I get a chance. Eric Spoelstra and Steve Kerr are some of the, you know, the better in-game coaches, I think, in the league right now, especially in the case of Eric Spoelstra. I think that there's a lot of things that, you know, Steve Kerr steals from Eric Spoelstra, and he would be the first to admit that to you. I think, you know, Steve Kerr was really, really impressed. I've had conversations with him about this, really impressed with Eric Spoelstra's coaching in the bubble last year. And it's one of the reasons that you see the Warriors playing so much more zone this year is because of what Spo did with the Heat in the bubble last season. So, you know, there's stars on the coaching staff, stars on the court. I think this could still be a fun game.
Nope. Sorry. Not cereal. For Miami fans, I'm coming from that perspective. Yes. Everything you said, absolutely true. I can understand it from a Warriors fan perspective, but looking at this Heat team and seeing them play as badly as they have, even though the Warriors are not a lesser opponent by any stretch of the imagination, I just, the idea of staying awake to watch Steph go off for 40 some points, not as enticing for me. Miami gives up more 3-pointers at a higher rate than any team in the league, it feels like. And you get, again, Amir Coffey having a career high. Golden State could, I mean, Steph can easily go for 50 tomorrow. So I am not as excited about the prospect of watching those two. But either way, it was great talking with you. You should always listen to Locked On Warriors and Locked On Heat whenever you get the opportunity. Subscribe to both shows. Leave a review. We always welcome that feedback. I'm David Ramil. That's Wes Goldberg. We're signing off and thanking you, as always, for your support.